team, and it's how he ministered to all the churches. Beyond this, Paul used the metaphor of a mother and father throughout his writings. In Galatians 4:19, Paul wrote, through the laboring grief of a mother, he writes, "My children with whom I am again in labor until Christ is formed in you." He pictured himself as a mother who first labored to give birth to these children, and then, as it were, he labored longer to bring her children to spiritual maturity. He's groaning and travailing and concern and pain to bring them to Christ, and then he's experiencing the same type of labor pains and seeing Christ formed in them. In 1 Corinthians 4:15, he pictured himself as a spiritual father. He told the church in Corinth, "For if you were to have countless tutors in Christ, yet you would have not many fathers. For in Christ Jesus, I became your father through the gospel." In fact, he also tells Timothy quite often, he calls him his son in the faith. Paul was the human source or the human instrument of their spiritual life. Furthermore, he was their first teacher and protector. He's not implying that he saved them, but that he's the instrument that God chose to use to bring new life to them through the gospel of Christ. He later told the church in his second epistle, "I seek not what is yours, but you." He says, "I don't want what you have. I want you." For children are not obligated to save up for their parents, but parents for their children. "I will most gladly spend and be spent for your suitcase, for your very soul." That's 2 Corinthians 12:14 through 15. Paul's use of these familial metaphors emphasized the care and affection of shared life that he had with those whom he, humanly speaking, birthed in Christ. He tenderly and sacrificially cared for them as a mother and sought to firmly instruct them as a father. And that brings us to our text in Matthew 7, in verses 7 through 9. We'll only look at the maternal aspect of parenthood this evening. In verses 7 through 9, Paul speaks about his leadership from a maternal point of view, namely, a mother's gentleness, that's verse 7. A mother's intimate affection, verse 8, A. Its sacrificial love, 8B, and its selfless labor, that's verse 9. So let's begin by looking at the first maternal aspect of authentic spiritual leadership, and that is gentleness. Beloved, I want you to understand, and I think it's it can be hard listening to a sermon that's about pastors when you're not a pastor. But I want you to know that the character that God calls me to, I am to model that for your sake so that you can model it in your home, that you can model it in the lives of others, that God uses you to be a spiritual mother, a spiritual father to. And so God doesn't call pastors to another supernatural plane. Rather, they are to be an illustration, a model for others to follow. So I want to encourage you with that. Paul writes that that spiritual leaders must be gentle. He writes, "But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children." Paul opens this section with the adversative conjunction "but." He's drawing a contrast. He is contrasting his conduct and the conduct of his team with the sinful behavior of the false teachers and their allegations against him. He's saying, "We didn't do this, but we did this." He reminded the church they did not operate under the deceitful guise of false piety as a pretense for greed, sexual favors, or power in the church. Rather, he was among them like a gentle nursing mother caring for her own children. Folks, this illustration is intended to be powerful. The term gentle is at the heart of this verse. It means to be kind to someone, and the word originally encompassed a host of other virtues such as compassion, graciousness, loyalty, and tenderheartedness, commitment, if you will. Paul and his ministry team didn't come to Thessalonica to exploit the people for their own prosperity. Not at all, they came to live and serve among them with kindness. Paul's ministry wasn't geared towards a select few wealthier congregants. He didn't just minister to the single women or the more notable, influential members in society that attended the church. He didn't come and minister to a select few. No, he was among them. He's implying, "I was with the church continually." His people was lived out, or his ministry was lived out among the whole church. A pastor must be among his people. Woe to the pastor that does not go to the pulpit smelling like his sheep. A pastor must be with the sheep. Moving on, Paul explained his degree of gentleness or tenderness toward the church by likening it to a nursing mother who tenderly or delicately and gently cared for her own children. Paul is saying, I succored you. I took the time to wrap you. I took the time to care for you when it was conducive and when it wasn't conducive. And no matter the cost, that's how I cared for you. Paul was not paid, he was not a paid surrogate. He was not a spiritual daycare worker, just putting in his time to make sure that the church didn't die. No, he considered himself the church's nursing mother, and he exhibited the same gentle affection as a new mother towards the body's spiritual needs. Anything that the church needed, Paul was right there to aid in their welfare. No sacrifice was too great to see it nurtured in Christ. The word simply translated taking care seems on the surface very, very general. But it infers a sensitive care. The words literally mean warm with heat. And it's inferring body heat. Loving mothers don't care for their children from a distance. No, they take them into their arms so that the child can hear their heartbeat, so the child can feel their warm embrace. This is the imagery that Paul is seeking to convey to these believers that are questioning his motives for ministry. These believers have now, once he departed, have begun to push back toward him. And Paul is saying, I want you to remember how I was among you. Paul, unlike the false teachers, was not harsh. He wasn't deceptive. He wasn't impatient. He wasn't indifferent. But rather, he was gentle and nurturing toward the church. Paul was seeking to serve and lead as Christ, who told those who were with him, in Matthew chapter 11, he told those who were weary and heavy laden to come to him. Why? Because he was gentle and lowly or humble of heart. Beloved, the heart of God, the very motivations of God toward man is one of humility and is one specifically to his people of nurturing gentleness. I want you to remember that, beloved, when you are restless and when you are weary in your walk with the Lord. He is the one who gives you rest. He is the one that succors you to his breast. He is the one that by his Spirit you can feel his warm embrace and know that he is nurturing you and caring for you by his Spirit. This takes us to the second paternal aspect of authentic spiritual leaders, and that is a spirit of intimate affection. Intimate affection. Paul writes, so being affectionately desirous of you. What motivates a mother's gentleness is her affection. It's her love for her child. Paul uses the same metaphor of fond affection to illustrate his concern for these believers. A mother's affection for her child is unequaled, it's unparalleled among human relationships. Especially as you're growing up, the most tender, the most compassionate relationship you have is with your mother. It's what drives a mother to get up all hours of the night to see to it that her child is fed, her child's changed, her child is feeling secure. In spite of pain, inconvenience, loss of sleep, loss of energy, loss of privacy and personal freedoms, a mother willingly forfeits it all these pleasures and all these liberties because she loves her child. And that is how a pastor is to serve the church, tirelessly. The word translated affectionately desirous is just one word. In the Greek, it means to long for someone passionately and earnestly, literally to be with them, to have them next to you. He goes on later in this chapter, he says that you were very dear to us. He says that I was affectionately desirous of you. I always wanted to be with you. There is no other place I wanted to go than to be with you. The same word translated affectionately desirous, interesting enough, is used on ancient. It's an inscription on ancient tombs. On ancient tombs of dead babies. This was the term parents used when they wanted to describe their intense longing to see their deceased child. They earnestly desire them. And that's how Paul felt about them. He couldn't wait for the next Sabbath. He couldn't wait for the next Lord's Day to teach, to be with them, to minister to them. He was this nurturing, gentle, sacrificial mother to this church. And he was content with the sacrifice. He was content with the loss. He goes on to say in this next portion, he says, we were ready. I was well pleased to share with you the gospel of Christ, not only the gospel of God, but even our own lives. That's how he felt toward the church. By using this exact word, affectionately desires, Paul acknowledged that God naturally designed such intimate affection to rest in the hearts of mothers for their children. Yet in so doing, he also reveals that God places this same desire in the heart of all godly spiritual leaders. Pastors, elders have been given supernatural affection to care for the family of God. They have been gifted and empowered to love with the affectionate heart of God, even when they're pushed back against. This takes us to our next point, the third maternal aspect of authentic spiritual leadership, and that is one of sacrificial love. Paul goes on to write in the latter part of verse 8, we were ready or well pleased to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves because you had become very dear to us. Paul is telling these believers that such personal and intimate supernatural affection was not the result of obligation. They're not simply carrying out their apostolic mission, their God-given assignment of winning souls and establishing churches. He wasn't saying, I'm going through the motions of what God called me to do and nothing more. Not at all. Rather, it was the highest joy of his heart to love and serve in this way. Paul knew of no other way to serve Christ than to sacrificially love and enjoin himself to God's people. He didn't see himself as a step above the rest, as part of the upper crust. No, he saw himself as one among many. With a God-given task to love the church, to establish the church in the truth, to develop its love for Christ. And he graciously and joyfully served in this way. The word translated ready, we're ready, carries the idea of well-pleased. It implies that a joyful readiness or eagerness. I think the word just translated ready is kind of incomplete. Paul's view of spiritual leadership was that of a well-pleased readiness to share the gospel of Christ. He was ready, as Keith noted this morning, in season, out of season. He was ready to dispense the power, unleash the power of the gospel wherever he went and to whomever he spoke with. He was ready, well pleased to share Christ and to serve the people of Christ. The point is, it wasn't dutiful to him, but joyful. He joyfully, lovingly, and sacrificially cared for the church of God. Moving on, Paul notes that they came first of all to share the gospel of God. The verb share, what does it mean to share? If we tell our children to share, what does that mean? That mean give everything up that you have? It's to give away part of what you already have and to keep some of it, right? And this is our tendency to say is to say, duh. But he says, we shared with you the gospel of God. This is exactly what happens when we share with others the divine truth of the gospel. We don't give it away where we don't have any. We share it with others. We share and yet fully retain the good news of the message of reconciliation with God through Christ. We are beggars, the spiritually impoverished, inviting other beggars to the good news of an eternal feast, the eternal riches of Christ. And we don't lose our seat at the table and the banqueting table, nor does the food of grace, mercy, and forgiveness ever run out. There is fullness in Christ. And when we invite others, we are inviting others to share in this feast. Beloved, Paul and his fellow workers taught the transforming truths of the gospel of God and yet retained those truths, and I would contend they even strengthened them by sharing them. The more that you share the gospel of God, the greater you become in your understanding of it, and the more articulate you are of it, as well as your confidence in it. By divine design, those who share the gospel form a loving, enriching fellowship with those who accept the message at their hands. It's impossible to share in the life-giving spiritual birthing of an individual by God's grace and not be affectionately desirous of their spiritual welfare. You can't help give birth to someone and then abandon them. By the Spirit of God, He enjoins you to them. You naturally, by God's gracious power, begin to assume a parental role in their lives, and that parental role becomes one of discipleship. Doesn't it break your heart when you see a child who's not being cared for? Not being loved upon, not being provided for. I had the opportunity a month ago to meet a man by the name of Jeffrey through a series of circumstances. There we go. I met Jeffrey, and he had recently come to faith in Christ through a relationship he had with a girl, and unfortunately, the relationship broke up, and he came to Christ through the ministry of the Vineyard, and now he's not being discipled, and I have, over the last month, have just been discipling him. He's not coming here. He's still going where he's going, but I've sought and I've felt an affection for him because he doesn't understand. By grace, someone gave him Wayne Grudem, Systematic Theology, and he's just been reading. That's a textbook we use in seminary. He's just been reading it. And so I've been using that as a gauge for our discipleship with him. But we sit out in a little heated area down in Champaign, and we just go over the gospel. And his own personal experience is what's going on in his life right now. But when I saw him and no one teaching him truth, no one going deep with him, my heart was fond. It was affectionately desirous of him. And it should be that way whenever we see a wayward believer, someone in need of truth. As a parent sees a child in need, we are to see one another that way. And a pastor has that responsibility with the church. Besides imparting the gospel, Paul, Silas, and Timothy shared also their own selves, or better, their own lives. Literally, they give up their souls, their real inner beings, their own welfare needs for the sake of the Thessalonians. These men, like nursing mothers, sacrifice their own ambitions, their liberties, and their desires for the spiritual livelihood of the church. They forsook it all for Christ and for the good of the church. Just as there are not part-time mothers, there are no part-time or surrogate spiritual leaders. Every spiritual godly leader is fully vested in the people of God. Just as a woman who fulfills the biblical role of motherhood does so at great cost to herself, unselfishly and generously setting aside her life for the benefit of her children, so does godly spiritual leaders. Paul ministered to the church with that same attitude of all-out, full commitment, because as babies to a mother, they had become very dear to him. Beloved, very dear is to aptly describe the pastor's relationship to the flock. Very dear. He must see his people that God has placed into his watch care as very dear. The church is not the pastor's hobby. It's not the pastor's play toy or even the pastor's profession. Rather, it must be the pastor's passion. The church must be viewed as his very dear child. Beloved, a godly pastor is more than an example. He's more than an educator, and he's more than an encourager. He is to be an intimately engaged and edifying parent of the church, caring for the flock with the tender and sacrificial heart of God. And this takes us to the last maternal aspect of authentic spiritual leadership, and that is unselfish labor. Unselfish labor. Paul writes in verse 9, "For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We work night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you while we proclaim to you the gospel of God." As proof of his affection, Paul again urged the Thessalonians to recall the character of his ministry that he had with them. He has done this already, and he's doing it again. He summarized his ministry among them with the words of labor and toil. Where do we get that idea? When he's talking about mothers and you hear this word labor, should your ears perk up? Now, I've not been a woman in labor, thankfully so. I think God took all the wimps and made us men, because if I did it once, I sure wouldn't do it again. But we see our wives in labor, and that is intense. And Paul describes labor and toil as his ministry, as his ministry to the church. And if you read the book of Acts, it aptly describes his service in Thessalonica. The word labor emphasizes the difficulty of a particular deed. It was laboring. Toil then underscores the strenuous hardship and struggle of performing it. Those two words combined to reflect not only the loving attitude of motherly concern, but also the sincere application of that concern. Motherhood involves continual labor and toil from the moment of delivery clear through adulthood. Many of you mothers know you don't stop being a mother when your child turns 18. They're still on your mind. You're still thinking about them, although your care and your authority changes from a position of oversight and authority to a position of instruction and a guide and friend. With that said, every mother knows there's no price her child can pay her in return for what she has done for them. She does not expect compensation, and nor would she receive it. Her love, her service, and sacrifice cannot be bought. Rather, it is given, and it is given out of deep affection. And that's Paul's labor among the Thessalonians. Likewise, Paul told the church that he and his co-laborers eagerly ministered to them with no desire of compensation. They selflessly served them out of a desirous affection for them, out of love. Paul gives a further explanation of what their service looked like in 2 Thessalonians 3, 7 and 9, 7 through 9. He said, "For you yourselves know how you ought to imitate us, because we were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it. But with, here, toil and labor, we worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you. It was not because we did not have that right," his apostolic authority, "to receive compensation for their service, but he did it to give you in ourselves an example to imitate." He and his companions lived on what he received from the Philippians. And how do we know that? Philippians 4:6 says that while he served, he received contribution from the Philippian church. And then he lived on what he earned in his trade as a tent maker. Obviously, the pluralistic "we" throughout here that says "we labored, we toiled" implied that they're helping Paul in his tent making ministry. He says, "We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you." Paul worked tirelessly not to be a burden to any of the Thessalonians because he knew they lacked material resources themselves. We know from 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 and 2, that the Thessalonian church was impoverished, and it was out of their poverty that they gave generously to the needs of the saints in Jerusalem. And he is not going to burden a church that doesn't have a lot. And I think, by way of reminder, not only for me, but for any man who follows me here, or should the Lord move you somewhere else, I don't think it's wise for a pastor to live above the income of his people. I just don't think so. I think that besmirches the gospel, and I think it looks like a pastor is, I just think it makes wealth, it puts too much emphasis on wealth. And so I think that a medium income of the people should be a medium income of the pastor. I think that that's only fitting. He should not tax the church in that way. And Paul also, he didn't want to just not be a burden to them, but he wanted to establish a pattern of an example of selfless service for the good of others. He says, "I don't only want to not burden you. Now that you hardly have anything for yourselves, now you need to provide for me. No. I don't want to burden you, but I want to give you an example of what selfless sacrificial service looks like." And we already know from chapter 1, they're doing exactly what he did. And how do we have further evidence? Because when he left, what are the saints doing? They're wanting to give. He says that they pleaded with him. This is 2 Corinthians chapter 8. They pleaded. They begged to be a part of the contribution to the saints in Jerusalem. And he says they gave out of the abundance of their poverty. So they weren't just poor, they were abundantly poor. And it's out of their poverty that they were giving to the needs of the saints in Jerusalem. Paul left them a good example, and they followed it. Paul pictured Silas, Timothy, and himself as spiritual mothers who made the maximum effort to provide gentleness, intimate affection, sacrificial love, and selfless or hardworking, selfless provision. as they proclaimed to them the gospel of God. They didn't want to encumber the gospel with secondary matters. Beloved, motherly love is a necessity for godly leadership, and it's the element that God uses to nurture and prime the heart of the church for spiritual growth. With that said, motherhood is only partially describes the effective spiritual leader. Fatherhood completes Paul's picture of leadership, and we will look at that next Sunday evening. Any questions? Any thoughts about this text? Something that might have came to mind, or maybe even a comment? Any thoughts? All righty. Let's close with any additional prayer requests. Is there anything that wasn't mentioned this morning? Additional burdens or concerns or even a praise?